Welcome to Inside the Space with the Millers. I'm Krista.
And I'm Corey. We've spent our lives in sports, dance, raising kids, building a business. But most importantly, we've been learning and growing every step of the way.
Here, we'll share the real story of chasing dreams, overcoming obstacles, raising kids, and most importantly, celebrating the small victories that make it all worth it.
This is the space where passion meets purpose and where we get to be honest about our journey. Let's dive in.
Start.
This kind of feels weird.
It does feel really weird.
Okay. This is what everybody does, though. Podcasts, I guess. So.
Well, we've been talking about doing a podcast, and here we are, our very first podcast. So, welcome to Inside the Space with the Millers, you and me.
Inside the space.
Yes, we literally are inside the space.
I know.
Always in our lives.
It's wild.
So. This is super exciting.
No, I'm so excited.
You finally let me add something more to my plate.
Yeah. I was just saying, like, is this something we really have time to add? A podcast, really, hon? That's...
Yes. The kids always say, all we do is talk.
All right, Krista. To be honest, let's tell the audience, why are we doing this? Is this something we can really add to our plate with 80 kids and a business and all of this stuff?
Well, I feel like it's perfect. All we're doing is always talking here at the studio. Our own children say we're always talking. So why don't we just record something? And so now we can actually have more stories, information, education to share with more people.
Yeah. I think it's interesting because I think a lot of people see the success of what the space is from the outside, but they never kind of get to see what happens on the inside, what happens behind the scenes, all the different things we go through. They see the Instagram, the perfect post, the beautiful, you know, visuals that Ryan creates and stuff. But a lot of times they don't get to see kind of like how it's created, what happened, how we started the space, yeah. What we do on a daily. Not that I think anyone's really interested, but maybe they are. I don't know.
I think too, for me, a big thing is I do a lot of one-on-one coaching, right? With whether it's parents or teachers, studio owners, and dancers just interested in questions, whether it's about how we raise the kids, how to be a better dancer, how to get in the business. So I also think this, you know, podcast could be something where we could actually continue to share, you know, a lot more information on more of a one-on-one basis versus someone having to book a private lesson.
Yeah. And I think ultimately we'd like to bring value to the listeners, right? I mean, ultimately a lot of people want to have, they want to come to the space. They want to know what it's like. Yeah. They want to have meetings. They want to, you know, Krista,
lots
can I
meetings.
Talk to you about my kid's journey, or can I talk to you about, you know, the industry? And I feel like this is a good way for us to bring value. And then also just share a little bit about who we are and why we started the space and, you know, where we are in our life. So why don't we maybe, I don't know, get into it. Why don't we start with talking to...
Going back. Where it all started. I mean, well, let's talk about how you and I, we've been together. Gosh, we're going to be celebrating our 29th wedding anniversary coming up. That's so crazy to think about that. So we have had a lot of years together, which is really cool. Just for those of you who don't know the story, I think our story, this is us, is what I like to call it, is really fun and different. And we definitely went against the grain back then, and we're going against it now. So Corey and I actually met in, oh my gosh, I'm going to date ourselves, 93, on a job, actually. He was skating for Rollerblade, and I was dancing for Reebok at something called the Super Show in Atlanta. And our choreographer, Jeff Andrews, at the time, was choreographing your show and my show, and we decided we were all going to go to dinner. It's CPK, right? California Pizza Kitchen. And we sat next to each other, and you know, we really talked and hit it off, which I thought was really great because we just had a lot in common, even just from sitting there. And to make a very, very long story short, we ended up basically finding out that we lived an hour from each other once we got back from the trip, and had our first date at your house. You had cooked me pasta, and you had Bob Marley like chilling in the background with like your incense and a salad and some wine and all the good things.
Jeez, you're making me sound like a romantic.
I was a little nervous, actually.
That's why I wore my shirt today, Romeo and Juliet.
Okay, that does bring me back.
Yeah.
But we did. We met back then, and just to give you maybe a little bit more background, those of you who don't know me before that, I was a dancer just like most of you all, or your kids, your daughters, your sons that you are raising at this time, and doing the comp world, doing all of the things that most people do in order to want to have a career in dancing. Although I really didn't know you could make money dancing. It was more of just like, okay, this is super fun. This is what we do. My mom takes me, drops me off, and then I got a little bit more serious. I was fortunate enough to get an agent when I was 18, Julie McDonald, Joseph Heldfond, and Rex. That was the big agency back then and probably one of the only agencies. And I got my very first audition and it came on my recorder. Those of you probably don't know, my phone had to ring and it went to my answering machine and I had to play the tape. And it was like, you have an audition for Saved by the Bell tomorrow.
Saved by the Bell.
Saved by the Bell at NBC, and you need to wear a cheerleading outfit, and here are the details, blah, blah, blah. Well, I was scared to death, first of all, to even go, and I thought, why do I have to wear a cheerleading outfit? I'm a dancer. Like, what does this have to do with anything? And Saved by the Bell wasn't a big show then, so nobody really knew how well it was going to do. So I asked my dad to take me, because I was a little nervous, to drive on this lot and park, and anyway, we go in, and we are literally cheering, and the episode is about the Valley against Bayside, the cheerleading championships. And I was supposed to be part of the Valley, and they were Bayside, and, you know, we were going to battle, kind of a thing. So it was super fun. Long story short, after about 4 or 5 hours of auditioning, they cast it, and I get it. My very first audition, which... mind
of course you got
those
it.
Are listening, this does not happen very often because usually it's like a 1 out of 300 auditions is what we've learned. But and we were going to work that day. I had to sneak outside and dad, can you please call in sick? Please, like, you got to stay here. I've got to rehearse it out for 7 or 8 hours. And I had no idea what I was
and
doing.
And you're 18 at this time, correct?
18.
Yeah, 18.
And I had no idea, like, okay, well, what are we doing? What is paperwork? What is SAG? What is AFTRA? So it was such a fun, cool experience. And I literally still get $13 checks from my residuals from Saved by the Bell. So one of my very first jobs.
Actually, you could still, I think I've seen you recite the cheer you did.
Yes.
What was it?
The episode still
go
plays.
Go Bayside.
Valley. Yeah, Valley. Right. We were Valley girls. I'm not a singer, please. I can't do that. But cheerleading I could do for sure.
Yeah.
So kind of started with that. And, you know, I ended up getting to do some wonderful music videos, and I was a Laker girl back in the day when Magic Johnson and we were at the Forum and Chick Hearn and all the cool Fab Five was out there, and you know, we were having to fight the Bulls and the Celtics out there. It was so fun. And I got to do the movie The Mask with Jim Carrey, got to be the lady police officer that dances with him on the cop car, which was so much fun.
Yeah.
And he's really, really tall, by the way. But lots of great jobs that kind of led me into the dance business, but I had always wanted and cared for students and kids and mentorship. I always wanted to pour into and have what most dancers have to have as a side hustle. And teaching has always been my passion. So alongside with auditioning and doing these awesome, cool, great jobs, I was able to start teaching and building up my teaching career. And then we kind of met.
Yeah, and joined forces.
What about you?
Well, no, I was just going to say, it's
same?
Interesting
you
that you were 18 and now
no?
we like mentor, you know, 18-year-old humans who are trying to break in the business.
For sure.
I think it's awesome that, yeah. That
let's
was
go,
good.
Let's go
that
back.
Was a really good little story. I felt like I was in it. I was just kind of
well,
going
sometimes,
along.
Sometimes, like, we tease now, right, about the story of when we did meet is very different from your view of mine.
I think it's interesting because... you know, everything is so like surface, even on social media, right? You see like glimpses of people's lives, right? You see like one photo and you don't really know what went behind that photo or how it was made or where it even was sometimes. And I think the younger generation tends to live through those like little moments. And so I don't know. I think it's interesting, you know, there's different mentors that are, you know, in the world right now for these young dancers and artists. And they may not know like who's behind who they're going to, you know, like people are coming to the space. They're coming because they've known us or they've known that, you know, we're the parents of Autumn Miller or that we were in the business maybe a little bit, but it's nice to get to hear, I think the true story of like where we came from and like how we got to the place we are, because I think a lot of people don't realize that it takes so much time. And like, I don't think there's as much patience. We're talking about 28 years of marriage. We're talking about raising two full kids. We're talking about even the space, it's 10 years in business. This summer will be our 10th like you know, wow, summer intensive.
Well, you talk about the word patience. I mean, this is something that we preach a lot in our programs, is you have so much time. And of course, back then we had no social media. We had no way to send a digital photo. I mean, you were making copies on Sunset Boulevard at Prince Charming.
Yeah.
No pun intended, Prince, not Prince, but Prince. And you were photocopying these and paying money and putting your agent's sticker on them and then literally being able to take them places so that you could get somewhere. Now today, everything happens like that.
Yeah.
And that's what everybody thinks everyone's story is. It's happening so fast and immediate. And I feel like you have a really interesting story. I remember trying to even introduce you to my mom and she said, "You mean he's a skater? Does he have a car?"
I mean, you know, from a young age, I was in theater. I played sports in high school. You know, and I think at 18, I was ready to like go see the world. I wanted to travel the world. I wanted to see what everything was. Besides, I grew up, obviously, I was born in Hawaii, grew up in Northern California in Sacramento, left at the age of 18 to Southern California. And I was kind of one of those kids that just wanted to come to LA and make it big. I wanted to become a famous actor at the time, you know, was taking theater. I was taking acting classes. I was doing the headshots. I kind of was getting involved in the entertainment business from an early age, you know, was breakdancing as a kid, and then got here and started going on auditions, you know, got an agent. And in those days, you know, if you wanted an agent, you had to like drop off tapes or pictures at like multiple, and we had to mail them, right? So it was like, you got these mailing addresses of all the different agents in Southern California. You put your, you know, manila envelope with the address and you put your tape in there of like maybe a monologue or your acting or photos or a resume of anything that you've done. And you send them out to like 10 and you just hope. And then you sit, like you said, at your machine, you know, waiting for the call to be like, "Hey,
But I was going to say, all of a sudden I was thinking about our pagers.
Oh,
we actually got a page from your agent, and then you had to go to a payphone because there was no phones, and then call them, right? Before you even did all the work to send the information in. So you had to actually be a lot more responsible back then.
Yeah. So the amount of work it took for us to like get an agent even back then was so different than it is now. Everything's digital. Everyone's looking through social medias. You know, it's word of mouth. It's like, who are you following? Who's following you? It's all these things, you know? And randomly enough, I was going on auditions for, you know, commercials, and there was an audition for Team Rollerblade, which was like, okay, what is Team Rollerblade? What does that mean? And I remember growing up as a roller skater, you know, I mean, even some of the sock hobs at the roller skating rink and DJing and
I loved my roller
being skating the skate guard
on Saturdays. Come on.
Yeah. And so I was good at it. And so I was like, oh, I got this. So I went, I remember my very first audition, I actually went and rented rollerblades at the beach for the audition for Team Rollerblade. I didn't even own rollerblades. And, you know, it was literally, I had to like spin girls around. Figure I had eights. To jump over things. They had like a little ramp. I had to do figure eights.
Yeah.
They wanted me to like twirl girls around for something because they did a lot of shows. They actually asked us to dance, which I was not good at like choreography.
I've seen you dancing on skates.
But, yeah.
Not too bad.
So yeah. Anyway, they ended up, you know, hiring me for a show at Knott's Berry Farm and said, okay, this is kind of your trial. We're going to hire you. And I remember I had never really been on a ramp on rollerblades before. I'd skateboarded and biked, you know, as a young kid. Cause rollerblades weren't even invented until the late 80s, early 90s. So I remember like literally dropping in my first ramp on my first job for Rollerblade and just wiping out, fully dropping in, thinking I'm all cool, and wiping out and being like, well, this is a lot harder than I thought. But anyway, yeah, it was the 3-month stint with Knott's Berry Farm. I learned how to drop in a half pipe. I learned how to skate and do stunts. I learned how to do pairs with girls and spin. I learned how to like pick up choreography. It was a great like entry level into the business. And then it was weird because from that point on, after that show, I got hired by Rollerblade. Every commercial, it became the fastest growing sport in America in the early 90s, piggybacking off of skateboarding. Yeah. And I literally booked commercials, and they even did a TV show called Blade Warriors back in the 90s. And it was like an American Gladiators on skates. And I got like hired as one of the guys that was going to like, we were the warriors or whatever. And we had to like protect, they built all these games on blades. And then from that point on, it sort of like catapulted me into the industry without, just because I was good at skating, you know what I mean? And so every TV show, there was even movies like Brink and Airborne, and a lot of early movies and television had rollerblading in it. Mm-hmm. And so we were, Team Rollerblade was kind of the first to be asked to do a lot of that. And so we got special auditions, and we continued on. It was an awesome, I feel like it was an awesome,
Well, it wasn't something you were expecting either.
Degree in the business.
I think today, especially with the kids in the programs, you know, the jobs that they're looking at or they think they're going to get are these huge tours, or I'm going to be on the American Music Awards or the AMA, like all the things.
Yeah.
And you don't realize that the steps or the relationships that you're making in other jobs are what's starting to create your resume for what's to come later. Like you said, it was a perfect entry level into what it was. And you were coming out here thinking that you were actually going to be auditioning for TV shows and commercials and movies, but here you are on a totally different path. But then it led to those other things later, which I think is really kind of cool.
It was great too, because even when I came out, and my mom said, look, you're not out of money, you got to get a job. And I remember waiting tables in the very beginning until I even got rollerblade. And it was a good life lesson to learn how to like deal with people. And it wasn't just like, you know, you come to LA and you make it big. It's like such a process, and there's so many levels involved that I don't think people really understand.
Patience, time, all the things.
Yeah. Even having a skill that you're good at, you know, having something different than just being a pretty face or whatever people would say. I don't know. Okay.
I remember.
How are we doing?
I'm doing great, but okay. I'm going to ask you just a question for fun.
Okay, cool.
Okay. I remember a job that you did with Vince Patterson.
Oh,
was it Super Bowl?
Super Bowl Mountain Dew commercial, which is interesting because obviously we just had Vince Patterson in the space last year, and he taught all the kids. But it was an audition for a Super Bowl. It was that Buzzley Berkeley style where they shot everything from the top and the skaters were going in a circle.
Busby,
is that what his name is? Busby Berkeley, yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know, there were skateboarders, there were bikers and rollerbladers. It was a full extreme sports. But it was funny because, you know, we're trying to be all cool and hardcore. And of course, Vince Patterson wanted us in sparkly, you know, sequenced uniforms or costumes, I guess. And so all the skaters and bikers and rollerbladers are like, are you want us to wear this? Like what? And I remember that. But what a job though. You're on the Super Bowl, you're making SAG rates, which I, you know, at that age too, you don't even really know what the union is and how it works. And, you know, getting a commercial in the late 90s, early 2000s, with SAG was like, you knew you were guaranteed $5,000 to $15,000 to $20,000 in residuals for a simple commercial. Yeah. So
it's changed a lot now, I think, with social media and things like that. I don't think the kids get.
Yeah. Well, there's
much now.
It's the Wild West, as they say. The internet has kind of turned it all into the Wild West, but cool.
I love that. I mean, that's kind of a good start about us. I mean, we could probably talk about this for a long time.
But I think it just shows, you know, to bring value, it's just, I feel like we've been through it, right? We're talking about 30 years of experience in the business, and not just from dancing, from skating, behind the camera, in front of the camera. You know, we both have done quite a few things to get us to this place. Maybe for the listeners, just because, you know, you starting off, you know, in the business, auditioning, doing music videos, you know, at what point, you know, early on, did you know, like, this is what you wanted to do? You know, did you always know that? I mean, I think some kids come into our program and they're like, I just want to move to LA and be and dance for Beyonce. You know what I mean? So how did you know?
I mean, I think that's actually a great question, because for me, I didn't really know what was out there, being that I grew up in Orange County and the business was 45 minutes away. No one I knew had made it. I actually had two younger students that I was teaching at the time, and they were 12, and there was an audition for Star Search. And
oh my gosh, they're redoing Star Search, I just heard.
Know, they're bringing it back, yes. And literally, they got on Star Search, and I remember being like, how did you guys get on Star Search? What do you do? And so long story short, my partner and I auditioned for Star Search, and we actually got on. We made it to the end, and then we lost to our friends that are out there today. But it's so fun. It was such a cool experience. I had never had any camera experience, nothing like that, which led kind of to the agency and getting involved in more of what was out there to come in this business. But to answer your question, I had no idea. I watched them go on Star Search and I was like, wait, you can dance on TV? I mean, obviously they probably weren't getting paid at that time. I actually don't remember because I think it was a different thing, but you probably got something for being on the show. But literally it was just like, wow, I knew in my heart of hearts that I was a dancer. I was going around cheerleading through my house, dancing constantly. It was just in my skin. You know, the Pointer Sisters would come on. I'm so excited. And I'd just be like dancing around. It was like my theme song. And my mom and dad would just be like, it's enough. Yeah. Sit down, stop moving. So I knew that there was something about performing, or when I got to do our recitals, you know, at the dance studio, it was like being on stage. So I had that fight and that drive, and I knew there was something bigger out there for me. I just didn't know how to get there or what it was or where do I go to do it. Yeah. So I think watching that and getting that first little tidbit of what it felt like to be on TV and, you know, fight for something, I kind of started to fall in love. Auditioning was a little scary, but it also drove you to want to focus, to be better, to know. And I really, again, had no plan. It wasn't like I'm moving somewhere, I'm going to be a professional dancer. It was like, if this works, great. Both my parents, you know, did not come from an artistic background at all. So yeah, the thought of making money as a dancer, like it was more of like, you're going to go to college. This is what this is going to be. So I had to negotiate that I would go to college and still dance. So I was able to do both.
And what did you go to college for again? You
had your degree. I went to Cal State Fullerton and I got my BFA in child development. So, right, you know, nothing to,
and
yeah,
then of course you my have a school now.
Of science, and now we run a school. So it's coming more into play. And I think more of the word of a psychologist versus anything, because, you know, it's more of mentally, how can dancers, how can our son as a soccer player, how can you handle the mental game, the mental stress of what this business is? Cause I feel like getting somewhere in the business is, even if you want to even put, let's say, put soccer out there, it's not black or white. It's very gray. Everybody's story goes a different way to get someplace. Somebody might have just booked this job right away. Other people, it took 7 years to even get a $300 music video, you know, or someone could be playing soccer for 15 years. And then what do you, you know, they don't ever really get to be what we always kind of joke around, the 1%.
Yeah. I bringing it back, that I think that's the funny part of even starting the podcast at this point in our life, right? Yeah. We've had the space now for 10 years. Our son is just turned 18 years old and signed his professional contract with the Galaxy last year. And then Autumn as well, who's 23, going to be 24, traveling the world with J Balvin, did Beyonce last year. So it's interesting because now we're at this place where, like, okay, we've kind of raised our kids up. We've made choices and we've done things that have been against the grain, some with the grain, you know, a lot of highs and lows. But I think from the outside looking in, some people may look in and be like, wow, like, what are they doing over there? How are they doing that? How did they raise those kids to do that? And I feel like, you know, first of all, I feel really humbled and lucky that we have, you know, that this has happened in our life. But at the same time, you know, I was just talking to Harbor the other day, like, I don't want to discredit the hard work that it took and the sacrifices. And I think that's something that people aren't doing as much today. And I don't know if I want to say this on this, but like, I feel like there's so many shortcuts to social media and so many shortcuts to make it look like you've made it, that it's deceiving a little bit of the younger generation, right? They come here and they, oh, we're going to go to the space where Krista and Corey are, you know, the directors of, and we're going to just immediately be like Autumn and be on Beyonce, or we're going to immediately like be a professional, or we're going to get connected to somebody and we're going to immediately do it. And I feel like, just to be honest and frank, I mean, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but like, we're here to kind of guide and show you and introduce you to things that we've learned along the way. But at the end of the day, I feel like it really is the hard work and the dedication and the person really wanting more out of it. Cause we can only, it's like the space when we first moved in the space, you know, Ryan and I used to always talk about how it was empty when we first moved in and it was just a big square box, but it had so much potential, you know, it was like this open box of like, you can create anything you want. And I feel like that's kind of like what the space still is to this day. Like kids come and it's like, it's this beautiful dance studio that has like floors and it has, you know, it has like pictures on the wall and it has some couches and it has like, you know, speakers and, but it's nothing without the human coming in and creating, you know, without them coming and wanting it and having dreams and goals and wanting to, like, you know, pour their blood, sweat and tears on the floor to make it. I feel like, I don't know if that's a good segue, but no. I feel like that's really important to talk about, because
I think what you said though about the kids getting excited, and I think sometimes even getting into the program, they feel like, okay, I've gotten it this far, because obviously we audition hundreds and hundreds of kids every year to, you know, really narrow down the special group that we really feel we can mentor and guide and help give them the tools and resources to be as successful as they possibly can with their own want.
Right.
When they get here, every single person's like, wow, this was way harder than I thought. A week here is so much harder. I can't believe that you guys, they use the word expect that much. And I always say, you don't think that you're gonna not be expected to have way higher expectations when you get out in the business or on your own. So I think us being able to be frank, like you said, and really truly prepare them for what they're getting themselves into, because this business is not easy. It is hard. It is sweaty. It is injury prone. It is, like you said, a lot of tears. I'll never forget you say to me, you said, why do all these girls cry so much? Why are they always crying? I'm like, babe, this is like mental for most people. Like, you know, girls, we got to stand and look in the mirror all day.
Yeah.
You know,
no, I know.
Mental
that
health is
hard.
Huge. What is your body image? I mean, so many different things that go along with being a dancer that really you have to have a smart brain. You have to have a very solid foundation. And you and I have always really tried to make the space a place where we truly invest in dancers and humans to be better people so that they can go out and represent the dance community in a better way. Yeah. And then hope to really keep God in the center of our universe here and him really balancing this for us, because we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for all the blessings and the things that he has really given us. And that's the honest truth.
Yeah. No, you know, a lot of the kids are always like, oh, I'm afraid to disappoint Krista, or I don't want to go in and talk to her. She's such a boss. And a lot of the kids will say they're scared of you, right? And I know you're the
I guess scared is
technique
good.
Queen.
Okay.
But I feel like, you know, to me, your like magic sauce is really your like want for them to be the best that they can be. And I think that's the hard part that they always feel like scared of, because you're actually going to push them to push themselves harder when maybe they don't want to. But then you also have like a gentle side, a loving side that you want to hear about their life. And you want to, you know, you want to guide them and have empathy for things that they are going through. And I feel like that's really like a really special thing that you have as a director. And I always look up to you for that too.
Thank you.
But when someone does come to the program, what are your expectations of them? Like what do you, when they say that, like, oh, I don't want to disappoint Krista. What is it that you're like expecting of them that they're afraid to disappoint you?
I think the word disappoint is a word that I'd love to get rid of. I think they're afraid that they can't meet the expectations, because I am going to hold them. I'm going to use the word accountable. They have to be accountable in this business. No one is going to hold your hand to respond to your agent's email.
Yeah.
No one is going to help them get an audition. They have to do it. No one is going to tell them, hey, you know what? Make sure that you don't speak to someone like that on a job. Make sure you're not watching your phone the whole time, even though you're on a break. You should be learning choreography. Are you rolling your eyes in the corner back there at me? Don't roll your eyes at the corner at me. You will never work a day in this life if you are doing certain things that I think they know I'm going to hold them accountable for.
Yeah.
And obviously in the technical world, you know, things have changed. Back in the 80s and the 90s, everything was technical, right? 70s,
jazz,
let's go back.
Was everything.
Jazz, contemporary, everything was technical. So my job was very clear back then. I've had to completely shift, pivot, turn to keep myself valid and relevant in a world where now hip hop and jazz funk and the fusion of all these styles, even TikTok, have now really become much more prevalent than the technical world. So I think my true goal for anyone walking into the studio, I want them to be well-rounded, and most people technique scares them. And so for me, they're only going to have more tricks to pull out of their bag at an audition if they can be a technician, if they can learn the foundations of hip hop, learn the foundations of jazz, all of the things. Can they move their body? Can they tell a story? Can they be actually someone that you can rely on? Basically, every person as a choreographer or a director or a producer, they want to hire someone, first of all, that they can be around and they like. Mm-hmm. And they're also, who can they rely on? Days of filming and shooting are long and exhausting. And so I think being able to share that with those students, and then can those students rise to the occasion and fight for that? We don't do competitions here, which I think is pretty much another secret sauce for us.
I feel like there's a lot of misunderstandings of the space. Maybe we should go into that. Like, everyone thinks it's a contemporary technique company.
Yeah, I know.
But what was the original reason for the space? Maybe we can go that direction. What do you think?
Okay. You want to go back? Like, should we rewind, like, how it all started?
Yeah, let's go back. I think just to kind of go to the space and, like, how the space was started, maybe. I know I kind of touched upon it a little bit, but...
Like, going back to the privates and all that.
Yeah, like, maybe knowing, like, especially if this is the space, you know, from our point of view, from the Millers, maybe we kind of bring them a little bit back. We told them a little bit about ourselves.
Okay.
Maybe we now say, okay, you guys, let us tell you a little bit about how the space was...
Okay. Perfect.
Invented. I don't know.
Okay. Let's rewind.
Created. I love the
I know we get kind of excited and ahead of ourselves, and being that it's our very first one, we're probably rambling a lot, but it is kind of fun. Okay. So let's rewind. How did the space really begin? And I know this is going to really sound so cliche, but we literally needed more space.
And remember, I was touching upon the space in the square box and how it was empty and we could create anything we wanted.
Right. I'm going to go back to Autumn probably being 7 or 8 and Harbor almost being born. And I had took a little hiatus from basically auditioning and doing, you know, what I was doing as Autumn was born. So I was now being a mom and I was teaching a little bit. And I was really doing a lot of private lessons and trying to find studios that I could rent. And those of you know that the amount of hours in a day at a studio and how many rooms are available are slim to none to do a private at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So we actually have a third story in our home, and it was kind of, well, it was going to be a pool table room, but it never quite made it to that. So I thought, let me put something together in our home where I could do some private lessons and let's see if I can, you know, help teach these kids that are asking, and I can basically supplement some of their questions and technical progress at their, they're all going to different studios because we didn't own a studio at the time. So
and this
I think
was early 2000s.
This is probably... I want to say maybe like 2006.
Okay.
And,
I just want to give it a timeline. Cause even when we started YouTube, it was 2008.
Yeah. And we hadn't really even started that yet. So really the privates is what we had started in our house. And I was teaching, you know, for lack of a better word, the same thing. Everyone's like, how do I turn better? How do I be a better dancer?
How do I stretch more?
Yes. So basically I'm trying to give them as much education as I can. But I was noticing as the parents would pull up, drop their kid, they would walk up all three stairs. Harbor is asleep, trying to take a nap. And Autumn's over here doing all of her dance moves, practicing and trying to homeschool at home. I started with 1 hour a week, and within 3 months, I was doing 7 to 8 hours in the house. And I remember you even being downstairs trying to manage the parents and the kids coming up and down the stairs. And it was really starting to create a little bit of havoc in our home.
Well, I think we even had to change the carpet on the stairs at one point because it wore out and you were like, oh my God, everyone. And we were like, you have to take off your shoes before you go upstairs.
And so really we started to come up with this idea of maybe we could start to video some of what I started to call my trick tips. And Autumn was always improvising and she'd be like, Dad, just film me doing this, film me. So we actually started a YouTube channel, which was Audie's Freestyle Friday, which was kind of a fun skit or a dance or just her improvising every Friday. And then I was doing trick tips on the Thursdays. And so I thought, well, if I put these videos out there, maybe this would even be helpful for more people to see what I'm doing. And to be honest with you, it really started to take off. Now, back then, we didn't know what viral meant. That was like...
Well, I remember
doctor.
I was still using the camera that I had gotten for free from Rollerblade. It was a JVC. And I remember I was using it to film skaters. Yeah. And I remember Autumn one day said, "Dad, film me doing dance." Cause I hadn't even really filmed dance much,
yeah,
you know? And so I remember that too. It was like, okay. And I remember getting the wide angle lens cause it was really cool for skaters to have wide, yeah, angle. But in dance, it actually was pretty cool too. Cause I was like, wow, it makes our dance room look so big and it was so little.
Yeah. And we were just like loading things up onto YouTube, hoping like to help and share with people and really to share some of Autumn's videos, even with our family members, yeah, right? It was a place that you could see things.
We used to have, I don't know if you remember, but we used to have these like family dinners at the house where our whole family would come over, the cousins and Autumn, and they would go upstairs and they would make up a dance and then they would make little tickets and they would want to sell tickets and they would come downstairs. We're all hanging out, all the adults, and they'd be like, okay, who wants to come to the show? And they would basically give us each a ticket and we'd have to go up the stairs, yep, to get it. We'd have to give our ticket. I think I remember Harbor being like 2 years old, give me your ticket, please. Yep. And he would give a ticket and then they would put on a dance show up, yep, there, and it would just be, yep, literally, it was improv. It was like put on the music to like the cool songs and then just dance. And I remember that was the very beginning of even filming. We're like, oh wow, this is kind of fun. And we'd, right, film them and we thought it was so cute back then.
And it was harmless. We had no idea what we were doing. There was no plan. There was no thought. Like I said, when the video started to take off, the word viral came up and I used to think, oh, this is like, it's a viral infection. I got to take my kid to the doctor. And they're like, no, this is a viral video. And I'm like, what does that mean? That means when it's getting traction or whatnot. We're like, okay.
Viral. Well,
along with the YouTube becoming a little bit more popular, so did my private lessons and so did Autumn. Now what was happening is, you know, we were starting to worry a little bit about our privacy. So many people were in and out of our home.
We started to build momentum and people started to know the room and they knew Autumn and they knew you. And we were getting all these like,
we got some interesting things going on.
Yeah.
And so we really needed more space. Obviously the room was very small. I'm sure we have some fun clips that we could show of that, how little it was. And so we talked about, could we just find a space where I could do some private lessons? She could film her Freestyle Fridays and I could do my trick tips, like just one room. So really, truthfully, that's how we started looking around. And lo and behold, we found a studio. Well, it wasn't even a studio. It was a warehouse space that was, I would say, 3 minutes from where our home was. And we were able to lock this down and we were scared to death. I remember talking to you being like, we cannot afford this. We have no students. We have no clients. How are we going to do this?
Well, let me go back just a second, because I think at one point you were renting space to do like these winter intensives.
Yeah, workshops.
And workshops. And this was kind of before there was a lot of convention and there wasn't a lot of that going on. And we would rent the studios and we'd get like 10 to 15 kids.
20 years
ago. A lot of kids from LA would come in because they didn't get technique out there.
Yeah.
And I remember renting them. I remember specifically, it was 2015, I think, and it was summer, and we were like, let's see if we can rent a warehouse. That'd be really cool to do an intensive at a warehouse and just have it, even if we had like 10 kids. And I remember looking around thinking, okay, it was actually our friends from Canada who gave us the idea, like, you should rent a warehouse and just do it yourself, because we kept renting places. And I remember driving up the road from the house and I saw this lease for lease sign. And I remember pulling up to the building, which is actually still the space today, Suite D. And I remember pulling up and going, I'm looking through the window and being like, okay, wow, there's an office and there's a big warehouse in there. Man, this could really work. I wonder if, because I remember at that time too, like finances were tight. We had kind of finished. I was like, Rollerblade was phasing out a little bit. You were just, you know, not dancing as much because, you know, being a mom.
Yeah.
And so our finances shrunk a lot. I always say we did really well in our 20s, and our 30s literally was the worst financial years of our life. And then it picked up after that. But I remember thinking, okay, I wonder if they'll just rent the space for us for a weekend of dance.
Like, no, you can lease it.
No, you can lease it for 2 years. You have to sign a lease. And I remember going, man, maybe we could just do that. Maybe. I don't know. What if we just got it and we filmed all our videos in here? And that was the beginning. And I'll never forget sitting on my computer in front of the parking lot. And I've told this story before, but I literally Photoshopped like KBM Talent and Audie's Freestyle Friday on top of the building. And I was like, okay, that would be really cool.
You were
like,
foreshadowing
to have it.
And you were really planting the seed back then.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. And I remember thinking, okay, what's the worst they can say is no. I might as well just go through the process. My mom had been in real estate. Your mom was in real estate. I'm like, maybe we can get a little help from our parents.
Yeah, which we had to do at that
time. Which we did. Yeah. And I remember going through the process. And I remember specifically emailing or calling the leasing guy and him saying, well, there's already somebody, you know, possibly going to, but I like you guys. Let me see what I can do. Can you get like some, you know, what was it? He wanted us to get a co-signer and can you get somebody to, cause our jobs were kind of a mess.
Yeah.
We really didn't have any stated income.
I hate that word, stated income. We're always going against the grain.
And he ended up letting us, I remember the first one was, it was $2,500 a month for 5,000 square feet. And
we had no students,
no furniture. We had no speakers. We had no anything. We didn't know what the heck we were doing. No dance floor.
We had a dinner in there. I'll never forget that on our first night. We got the keys.
Yep, Ryan was in there. I remember Ryan, Jessica. Des. And we,
Todd here, maybe.
We had one cardboard table that we put, and we ordered pizza and we opened a bottle of wine and it was just bare warehouse. Yep. Spider webs are like dropping on us.
So we had no idea how much work was going to be in front of us, you know, but I think at that time, the one thing that I just always want to give you kudos to for me is that I'm always more of like, I need the risk management profile. I need all.
Well, if I would have given you at that time, you would have been like, no way.
We were in the red all the way around when we started that. But I feel like you've always had such big dreams and have wanted things that were in my mind, intangible, something I couldn't touch. I needed to see, okay, if we did already make $3,000 a month and we were going to spend $2,500, well, then there's an extra 500. That's always how my brain had worked. And I grew up that way with, you know, you had to have the things lined up in order to do it. And I love that you made mention of being able to foreshadow that and how you did Photoshop the building. I'll never forget getting that. And I was like, my first reaction, like, you bought it? You got it? Like, you know, like, wait.
You had secret money you didn't tell me about?
Oh, have you been hiding? Are you? You know, I just was like really panicked. And then obviously as it came into light and fruition, it was probably the scariest 3 years of our life, but we were able to start to build the privates. I basically built the studio on private lessons. People don't believe that, but I mean, it started with one person and then they told a friend and they told a friend, and the traction that it got, you know, was,
I mean, that's
really
all
we did in
the very beginning was we did intensives. You did private lessons and we filmed YouTube.
We only did two intensives a year. Yeah. I was probably doing maybe 8 hours of privates a week. And also we started doing open classes. I think our first open class, we had 7 students.
Yeah.
So
I don't think people really realize how small the space started. You know, I think when you go back to saying, you know, the creative side, I feel like I really got that from the skating industry because, you know, we traveled the world and we were just skaters, and you'd look at the world, you know, you'd look at rails and architecture of buildings and you looked at it. And I remember from all the skaters, you look at it in such a way where normal people would see a handrail to hold onto when you walk down, and skaters are thinking of different ways to grind on it and to get up and down it on their board or on their bikes or on their blades.
And me as a parent is like, please don't hurt yourself. Do you have the helmet on? Don't.
But I feel like that brings value too, because people think that things happen fast. I think even to this day, like having 70 or 80 kids and having the 4 units of the space, they don't realize that we started with an empty building, one little speaker, and a sound system and 6 kids. And I think 3 of them were free because they were our daughter. It was Jessica and Lexi. Like it was friends, right?
Uh-huh. Yep.
And, you know, just grinding every day and being excited to create things in the space. I feel like at that point too, social was so small. I don't even think Instagram was around. YouTube has just started. And so there wasn't a lot of places to look for inspiration. We kind of had our head down and we're like, oh, what if we try this? What if we try that?
Instagram had just started.
And like we would make mistakes and things would look really bad. Like if I go back to some of the videos we shot at the space early on, I look back, I'm like, oh my gosh, I would never post that now. But that, I don't know if that's the right.
No, because now
frame of mind, because I'm trying to teach them you have to start somewhere
to be authentic and real. And I think when we kind of started it, the one thing that we started to notice a year or so in is that there was something missing in the dance world. There wasn't a place where kids could actually go and train
and do everything, not just one competition in all the genres. It was like things that you would need for the business, you know what I mean? Yeah. From professional choreographers or acting or singing or ballroom dancing wasn't even a thing back then, you know?
Right. It brings me back to what I spoke about earlier, what I would want for them, well-rounded.
Yeah.
And we were pretty much doing it with Autumn, running over here to take hip hop class. We were going over here to get vocals,
ballet.
Pilates over here, the best ballet. We were starting to put all these best things together. And I think when we started to really think about what would be another level for us, because we knew we didn't want to get into the competition, you know, side of anything. I feel like, you know, truthfully, that just brings out a pretty harsh reality with people when they're competing against each other. I'd rather us be competing against ourselves and find a place where kids could be seen and be heard and actually be guided or mentored. And I think we are so good at that, that could we share all those experiences and what we're actually doing with our daughter at the time, who was probably around 15. And so I think really the idea of all of these things is our thought process of how our launch program started is, oh my gosh, could we put together something on a very small scale?
Which yeah, homeschool.
Yeah, like a little homeschool. Maybe they can do a few hours with us and it'll, and they could still
and
go to the home studio.
To be able to do things, yeah.
We were kind of the extra studio, something they could do during the day, and then they could still go and get more hours.
Yeah.
It's so interesting when I think about it. And we really, I think, filled a void at that time that nobody had.
Well, I remember even the competition thing. You know, Autumn had gone through competitions for a good 5 years or more. And it was really fun in the beginning when she was young, right?
Of course.
And like, it was exciting.
Except but when then I had to put eyelashes in the morning at 5:30 and don't, my hair, don't, you're pulling too hard. Those are the things that I remember that I didn't like.
Exactly. But as we got into it, I felt like there was this, I don't know, like it was a weird thing that like, to me, broke apart community a lot. Like there would be families that would like, you know,
yeah.
pinch again. They would like get in arguments over who was in the front and who was being seen.
Yeah.
There was a big separation, especially as Autumn got into the teens, right? Where
yeah.
like it started to get cutthroat. The girls were mean.
Yeah.
You know,
and
there was like favoritisms.
Well.
There were all kinds of stuff and she would win all these comps. And then, you know, I feel like that was the transition for me too, with the space where like, I want to do something that is more communal. That's more like artistic, that's not just doing the same dance all year long and competing and having like random people who have their own opinion about dance judging you. And then you get mad at yourself because you think you didn't do good because someone just didn't like from their point of view.
And I think competition is really great for people that want practice, like for the young kids that want practice being on stage and performing. I think that that's great. And I think when you're ready for the next
stage. This could probably
stage,
be a heated conversation about
yeah,
competition. That
could.
At some point, we're
yeah.
going to have to get into this.
We can get into that at some point. But I think truly for me, I think we learned also that the accolades from the competitions really didn't add up to anything
yeah.
in the dance business. So what we can do is leave all the people that want to compete and do all that, which is awesome. And if that's what you want to do, great. But I think we wanted to lean in a different direction. And we went that way because we've done the competitions and we were both successful in our businesses and being in the business of the entertainment world. So when we got to make that swing and we knew it could be successful, we knew we wanted to help push Autumn there. And if there was anyone else that wanted to join in this journey with us, let's try this. I mean, and we started our first launch program with 5 kids.
Well said. Wow, that was good. Someone clipped that.
Oh, well, I feel like
no,
we've been talking a lot.
I know, we've been going around, but I think I just wanted to, I don't know, kind of just give a little history to the space and how it was started and who we are, because I feel like we don't really show too much. We've been pretty private, believe it or not, even though people would say we're not because they yeah. see all of our social medias and our YouTubes over the years. But we really have a pretty close-knit family friends group that we hang out with. And a lot of them we've been doing, I mean, even some of the teachers that come to the space, I mean, you've known them for 20, 30, 40 years.
And now
which
they're
dates
hiring
us, but,
of our dancers.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
And
well,
so I just think that's important sometimes, I think, for the listener to know and
yeah.
to realize, because maybe they don't know. You know, even the kids, sometimes when they come here, they're like, when they see you dance, they're like, dang, Krista, go.
I was like,
and you're
what
like,
do you think?
What do you
come
think?
On.
I've been dancing forever. Or things that we've done in our past. They're like, wow.
You they only see you as a parent or they only see you as that.
Yeah.
Like, let me pull out the old VHS tapes and let me show you what I was doing back then.
Even our own kids are like, dad, wow, you look cool back then.
I know.
Now that the 90s are coming back in style.
I really want this podcast to be about an extension of what we truly do here. Real conversations, you know, really life lessons about what we all do, how we fail, how we succeed, what we go through. And I just want it to be an extension of truthfully our family. What can we expect for future podcasts, Mr. Miller?
Oh, let's see. What can we expect? Okay, I wrote this down and I've been playing with ChatGPT a lot lately because I think chat AI is taking over the world, if you haven't heard already. But I kind of like tried to format some of my ideas, but I feel like this podcast is going to be the things that you don't see on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. I feel like it's going to be a little bit raw. It's going to be behind the scenes. It's going to be us having coffee. It's going to be us talking about whatever our business plan is for the next year, whatever we're going through behind the scenes, the struggles. I mean,
Answering questions,
Q&As could be good. We'd love to have other people on with us that
bring on choreographers, you know, dancers, teachers,
filmmakers, artists. Like, I don't know. I feel like it can be a mix of a lot of things, including parenting stuff. I feel like the dance, the space, what happens in here, maybe even bringing on students and have questions on them, you know, for them, you know. I feel like mental health is something we should talk about because it's a thing that kids are going through. And is it because of social? Is it because of the way they were brought up? These are like things I think we could talk about as a community. I feel like how to balance maybe like business and real life and
I think especially as a mom, and I get a lot of questions about, you know, a dance studio owner and their daughter. How is that relationship? And it's been interesting and it's changed a lot.
And that's so I think we will definitely talk about. Maybe even also like, what does success look like in the business? I think people have these like visions of success being this like gold trophy, you know, dancing for Beyonce, getting a movie, but to live a healthy, balanced lifestyle, there's so much more to it. It's the little job, like you said, that you know, the Saved by the Bells. It's the, you know, touring and, you know, doing maybe like an Instagram thing or getting a sponsorship, like all of these stuff, going on auditions, meeting an agent, you know, assisting a choreographer. Maybe these are the things that would be interesting to people. I don't know, but I feel like we're going to try our best to bring value to it so that, you know, when people are looking to the space or to us, like that there's, you know, that there's some like, I don't know, guidance there. There's some like, what do you call it? Like love and like
support
in that area. I don't know. What do you think?
I think if there's one thing that we've learned is that people truly need space to grow, right? And it's really, no pun intended, but it's really true. And I think we both want to be the people to be able to hear them, listen to them, and then hold them up when they're in a hard time. And I think everyone listening feels the exact same way, whether they're a parent, whether a studio owner, whether they're a dancer trying to make it again. Right. What does that mean?
I feel like community is one that I really want to lean into, because even if we're not accessible, if you can build up dancers and leaders in this business to be supportive and to like have empathy and have wisdom of how to make it or how to be happy, I guess. Because a lot of the kids always ask, you know, I just want to be happy when I get older. And what does happy mean? You know, like
doing something you love.
But I feel like there needs to be a community of young artists and dancers that can support each other. I feel like that's so huge. I mean, especially on the internet, you look at social and people are constantly judging everybody for everything.
Room for everyone. I think people want to push people out. It's like, I think there's room for everyone.
Yeah.
There's, you know what I mean? This is not rocket science, what we're talking about. It's experience. It's just what we feel and being real, I think, with ourselves and with our students and with our listeners. I mean, I think that's the biggest thing.
Yeah.
The big word for me as we kind of close it down is relationships. Yeah. And I feel like this business is all about relationships. Our relationship is important. We have to nurture and foster and tend to our students. We have to do the same. Our own kids, we have to do the same. And now I hope that we can start to build a relationship with our subscribers, our followers, our listeners, all of the things. So I'm really excited about it.
Well, thanks for being married to me for 28 years, almost.
Okay, well, thanks for being married to me
and
for 29 years.
Thank you
years.
For trusting in me and us to start a space that didn't make sense at the time. Thank you for bringing in two beautiful children into the world and being such a boss. And honestly, I feel like as we've gotten older, the joy that this journey has brought makes me happy. When someone asks, what does happy mean? It doesn't mean that there's not trials and tribulations and tears and stuff. It means that, you know, we're at a place in our life right now where we've gone through some stuff. But I do want to end with one of the things at the space that, you know, we've both come to understand is that it's not about the destination. You know, and there's that quote, it's not about the destination, it's about the journey, not the destination. But what I think for me, what I've realized is the destination is the journey, right? So like every day is a destination. Every day we're dealing with things and we get through it and we get to the end of the day and, you know, tired or happy, whatever it is, you know, we're going through that journey. And so that destination, whatever it is at the end of that day. And then second of all, you know, just God, I think, you know, having him in our life. And this is a whole nother topic that we could probably get on at some point, but you know, people prayed upon us early on when we were baptized in the early 2000s to like, you know, to just be a light and to, and not, you know, maybe preach the word, whatever, but to like, just be a light and love on people and let him do his work that he wants to do through people.
You're making me tear up.
I mean, even the space logo itself to me is like, you know, and I've said this before, but it's pointing up to a higher power and it's shaped in a way that like we can all get under it together and go, you know? And I feel like that's sort of the space foundation to me, you know? It's like, let's get under this thing together. Let's build community. Let's do art. Let's, you know, love on God and love on people as he wanted us to. Let's, I don't know. Let's bring as much joy as we can, support each other.
You said
let's listen to music. Let's
dance. You're giving me teary eyes. You're giving me teary eyes.
Let's do higher releves and more turns.
Yes,
and
all of the things.
All of the things.
Under the space in one roof, under God, all of the things.